WBOK, real talk for real time.
The Good Morning Show, hot like fire, talking to you on WBOK, 1230 AM, real talk for real time.
Real talk for real time, that is what we do. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Check your time, folks. It's 9:05 now, 5 minutes after 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning in the building and having this conversation with us. He is back, the administrator, the head man that writes the checks. Mr. David Gilmore is with us from the Housing Authority of New Orleans. Good morning to you, sir. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm delighted.
Well, you know, the last time that we talked, I think, I caught you in Washington, D.C. On the phone?
I was probably in New England.
New England?
Yeah, I don't even remember.
So what's been going on with you? And, of course, you know, we got about 500 different questions, so I'll let you start them off then.
Well, I think the big news right now is that we've gotten – beat the redevelopment of B.W. Cooper back up and
mm-hmm.
running.
Mm-hmm.
That it's been sort of dormant there for a while, caught up in the issue of the expansion of the GO Zone tax credits. And
how big was that? Because I've had several conversations with folks, including Mary Landrieu, talking to the senator about those GO Zones and talking to a couple of folks with the finance agency out of Baton Rouge, Milton. And trying to figure out exactly what are we doing about the GO Zone monies. I mean, those tax credits seem to be the only thing that made it say we're either going to build or we're not going to build, and this land that we tore down these developments on, we're going to sit dormant.
Well, the of the big four, Gerard, two of the big four were the ones that are most threatened
mm-hmm.
by the controversy around the GO Zone tax credits, B.W. Cooper and Lafitte. I'm happy to tell your listeners that that since we talked about this the last time, the Congress did extend the GO Zone tax credits for 1 year,
mm-hmm.
back now through December 31st of 2011. And that provided a significant amount of relief to us, although not totally the relief we were looking for. We wanted to go for 2012. But that's still a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
However, to put this in money terms, if that hadn't happened, that's about $37 million or so in tax credit assistance
mm-hmm.
that would have been lost. And frankly, B.W. Cooper never would have happened under those circumstances, and Lafitte would have been would have been seriously jeopardized.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're back on track. Construction has started again at B.W. Cooper. There's a new investor on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Willing to guarantee the investment in the tax credits. They have a new development partner that's come on board, the same company that was doing CJP that's now part of the B.W. Cooper process, and the construction has started, and I've authorized the resumption of construction at B.W. Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And Lafitte is, anybody who goes by that site knows that it's now well on its way.
That's right. Now, what are we looking with time frame of Lafitte? Because mm-hmm. I did go down Orleans Avenue. As a matter of fact, I was looking at some of the buildings and the structures there, and I'm seeing them go up. Well, what are we looking with time frame and being able to put residents in those buildings?
I don't know exactly the dates, but some of the vertical construction is almost done
mm-hmm.
at one end of the site.
Okay.
And you know that there was a celebration a few weeks ago where Secretary Donovan was here,
mm-hmm.
And some of the residents are starting to move in, I think, as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
I won't swear to that today, but I know it's imminent.
Mm-hmm. Now, something I was asking you off air here, and I was trying to get some understanding here, and you may have to explain it to me a little bit better and talk to me like I'm two, like I tell you every year that we have these conversations. I'm looking at the IDB saying that we need to have a certain percentile of folks living in the city that are working on these construction projects,
mm-hmm.
and you're in agreement with them.
I am absolutely in agreement with them. Let me explain in just a few sentences here. The Industrial Development Board is the group, the organization that makes the decision when anybody goes or needs some relief from real estate taxes in the city of New Orleans. And clearly, our subsidized housing developments like Cooper and Lafitte and so on rely on some real estate tax relief. So what we do is we agree with the IDB to make a payment in lieu of taxes, a pilot payment, which is a small fraction of the assessed valuation of the property. Very simply put, in return for that, the IDB is saying to us, you guys have to do a better job providing jobs and training opportunities for residents of Orleans Parish.
Mm-hmm.
Because the folks that come and build these places historically come from outside the parish, you know. The contractors bring their workers onto the site. So basically, we've had a long conversation with IDB over the last several months, and we've agreed on two things. One is that there will be a benchmark of 40% of the jobs at Cooper and Lafitte will go to Orleans Parish residents, an average of the daily workforce over time.
Mm-hmm.
40% is a higher number than I think there's ever been. And I've always said, you may have heard me say this right here with you in this room, that you can crow about your accomplishments, you know, with respect to minority hiring and WBE and MBE and all that.
Mm.
But if the bar has been set too low, then those accomplishments don't mean much.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're beginning to put the money where our mouth is. We're raising the bar.
Okay.
In addition to that, one last thing is we have been working with the Industrial Development Board, particularly the chairman, the president of the board, I guess he's called, and that's Walter Flowers, to develop this very innovative thing called a Crescent City Job Match, in which we have agreed all the contractors that work for Hano, all the goods and service providers that have contracts for Hano, will post jobs on a website. Residents of Orleans Parish can apply for those jobs, but in the process also get involved in a training activity so that they're work ready to take on those jobs. And we're going to have that thing. They're going to be kiosks, computer kiosks set up all over the place. It's web-based, and so it's going to be open to everybody. And we are absolutely delighted with that. And it's just now beginning to chug to life.
And I was I guess my biggest question was when I saw this and started trying to follow up a little bit on it and asking some questions, 40% is not bad. And I don't think that's a bad idea at all. But do we have the number of contractors that are going to say, yes, I'm an Orleans Parish, I'm hiring Orleans Parish folks here, and then what will be the protections to say, well, I hired one, but I had to fire him too because he didn't work or da-da-da-da. And will those protections be put in place? Because if I'm trying to skirt around what the qualifications are, there's always loopholes.
My friend, there are teeth to this
so
that everybody understands. That is to say, if the developers that have been granted these tax reliefs don't meet the threshold requirements, there's a financial penalty that goes along with it. The IDB gets to collect in taxes something to the equivalent of what otherwise these employees would have paid in taxes had they been actually employed. And so the trade-off is really it's a smart trade-off in a lot of ways, because essentially, if we're getting tax relief on the real estate base, this is an opportunity for us to return money to the tax rolls of the city of New Orleans through employment, through training, through the purchase of goods and services, all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a fear that contractors are going to flee from working with us under the circumstances? Frankly, I doubt it. I mean, we pour millions of dollars every year into the economy of this area, not just New Orleans, but the surrounding areas as well. Contractors line up to come work for us.
Mm-hmm.
They just do.
Mm-hmm.
And this 40% applies to start with, applies to the development teams at BW Cooper and Lafitte. But we're looking to spread this out now. We've just engaged or appointed somebody from in-house to be our Section 3 coordinator. Because we're going to, I think we need to put some teeth into this. I mean, we've talked about this for a long, 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 long time.
Right.
And I'm tired of justifying that which
can't be justified. So you're going to sit and you're going to stand behind it?
You bet.
You're going to stand with IDB?
You bet.
No ifs, ands, and buts?
No ifs, ands, or buts.
Okay, we're going to write this
I'm with the IDB on this one.
I'll write this down on the calendar.
I went to a meeting with these guys, and you know, while there are folks in the audience that were sort of saying, well, you know, that's going to be... So look, I'm with the IDB on this. I'm on their side of this issue.
Now, was that strange? I mean, did the folks look at you and go, have you lost your mind? Have you been sipping on the scissors?
On both sides, by the way. I don't think IDB didn't believe you either? Well, you know, it's just that they weren't accustomed to hearing it.
Okay.
With that degree of certainty. You know, they weren't accustomed to hearing that commitment. Mm-hmm.
Something that I read over the weekend, and I was trying to get all my information together, and you're going to have to, again, explain this to me. Errol Williams saying that the big four projects or the housing developments are going to owe some taxes here, and that these units don't have as many tax credits as they think, somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, $500,000?
That's a new one on me.
Has anybody been paying attention to the fact that the assessor has said that the legalities that are being put forth in front of these developments, that they owe the city taxes?
I'm not an expert in this area, but I will tell you that from what I've heard, by the way, Gerard, we're going to go meet with the assessor over this and come to a meeting of the minds about what this is really all about. But the concept of a pilot payment by a public agency like Hano is time-honored. It's been going on for years. As a matter of fact, it's built into a contract between the federal government and the city of New Orleans that goes back 20, 30, 40 years, a thing called a cooperation agreement, in which in return for the city for the federal investment in housing, the city agrees to provide real estate tax relief, and the pilot payment comes in lieu of that. So we don't think the assessor's actually correct in his assessment that these properties should not have or were not eligible for that kind of tax relief, but we're going to go and sit down with them and meet with them to see if we can avoid this problem. There are some developments like Savoy, the old Desire, that didn't get acknowledged as eligible for a pilot, and there is a tax problem there. And that's getting worked out through the courts as near as I can tell.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, when we talk about tax relief or tax benefits or tax credits, you know, what will be the legalities there later on? You know, will we see a cost in the rents or the ownership start to go up because of the fact that we need to make sure that we're making enough money to pay the taxes on the units as well? Well,
ultimately, that's
the point.
Or
will the city be able to say, well, we're getting ready to seize these properties if you owe that much money to the city?
Well, first of all, the city can't seize the housing authority's properties. That would not be possible. The housing authority has assets that are protected from that sort of thing. But that's the whole point to this pilot. The whole point of the pilot is to make, ultimately, the project affordable enough so that those rents are within the affordable range. And by the way, the pilot payments only apply to the subsidized units, doesn't apply to the market rate units.
Okay. Iberville. Iberville has been always a hot topic, and of course we hear that there's monies now being gotten so that there can be some redevelopment here. Is that moving forward?
Well, we're in a limbo period right now.
Limbo?
Does
that mean we sit like, and sell, or are we getting ready to do the dance?
We are getting ready to do the dance.
Okay.
The dance, and I want everybody that listens to us have this conversation to know that I'm committed to the redevelopment of Iberville with or without the federal government's grant.
With or without?
With or without.
Does that mean you got a big check? You getting ready to write yourself personally?
No.
Because how much money are we talking?
We're talking about a couple of $100 million.
We got the money?
No, we don't have the money yet. Absolutely not. But keep in mind that the money that the feds put into this, while important and valuable, and I don't mean to denigrate this in any way, the amount of money that will come to us if we win Choice Neighborhoods is a fraction of that amount. So no matter what, we still have to raise a significant amount of private, public, cooperative capital. Tax credits, retail investments, new housing developments which bring investments into the city, all kinds of things like that which ultimately make the boundaries of this project. So when I say Iberville is a go no matter what, I will tell you that I think the $35 million that could come our way under Choice Neighborhoods is important, but is not absolutely critical to our moving forward. Something good is going to happen in Iberville in the downtown New Orleans area.
In our last conversation about Iberville, one of the things, too, that I know that you said and I thought was pretty good is the fact that we don't have to move everybody out at the same time and try to find them housing units. But I guess some of my community service, I've had a conversation with a couple of folks that have done some excellent housing plans and put together different communities across the city. And they're saying that, you know what, we don't have everyone in these homes now. And I just had a Black History program that I was involved in February, where I sat down and talked to the pastor. And as I walked out of the church, I said, man, those are nice houses. He said, we own all of them. Mm-hmm. And it's like 27 of them, and they're not full. But I said, you know what, I'm going to ask Mr. Gilmore, if you're getting ready to relocate some folks, would that be something that you could consider? And does it have to be in the city of New Orleans, or can it be outside of the outskirts?
We are determined, Gerard, to do the development inside the city of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I think New Orleans has to be the primary beneficiary. On the other hand, on a family-by-family case basis, mm-hmm. if there are folks who would rather relocate to someplace outside the city, they have a legal right to do so.
They do have the legal right
absolutely
to do it. And the only reason why I said that was because when I looked at the community, number one, the ability to move around with, and it's an elderly, and I'm not trying to call anybody old, but it is an elderly community. And when I started looking at the wraparound services that are in that community, I said, this would be perfect. And why just let those brand-new houses just sit there?
No, we do not tell. We're going to make every effort we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
It's why they call this choice neighborhoods,
okay.
to give people a range of choices, ultimately, as to where they want to live. And those people, by the way, that are relocated through the facility of the Section 8 voucher program,
mm-hmm.
Can go any place in the United States that they wish. They
okay.
can take those vouchers and port them out to any place.
Well, I definitely will have that conversation with you and try to have it with you sometime in the near future so that you'll know exactly where it is, too.
Absolutely.
27 homes sitting there, brand new, just sitting there. So hopefully we can get some folks some help here. Got time to take some calls?
Please do.
All right, let's start it up here. Let's talk to Charles. Charles, what you say?
How you doing, Gerard?
Good, and yourself?
I'm doing well, and to your guests, how you doing, sir?
Good, Charles. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I just want to ask a couple of questions. The community center at the Cooper and Lafitte, is it possible to allow a mentoring group to come in and reach out to the single moms and grandmothers to help them with the their boys, like, teaching them chess, fishing lessons, stuff like that, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm going to give you a broad answer, a general answer, to say that everything is possible.
Okay.
With respect to that sort of thing. I don't know off the top of my head who you would want to contact. For example, at the Lafitte Project, we're using the Sojourner Truth Community Center there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are activities ongoing with respect to that. And there are going to be resident services activities building and building and building as the population increases. So you'll at some point want to contact the manager of each of those places.
Okay, it's possible to go through that route.
Absolutely.
And we also have a resident. And the next question is, I see phase two has started back with the on the south side of the BW Cooper with the parking and the roadways being poured. So I think all the building pads are completed. But on phase one, The curb and roadway was already done, and the timber piles have been put in, but the grass has taken over, and it seems as if someone has been going in and dumping soil and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Has there been a cost put up on how much it's going to cost to go in and clean that grass out around those piles and get that area back to being finished again?
Well,
and I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah,
right,
I appreciate that. If you're telling me that there's some mess beginning to develop out there, I haven't seen it, so I'm going to go take a look at it, and we're going to get it cleaned up. Let's assume that the cost is not a big issue. It's going to happen under any circumstances.
Okay. Let's take Michonne. Michonne, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Gilmore, I had a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Landlords that are receiving the Section 8 vouchers, for example, if a tenant is receiving a certain amount, and then the landlord wants an additional $300. Is that legal for the landlord to do?
Well, it would depend upon the circumstances. It is, in fact, legal under certain circumstances for landlords and tenants to agree that the tenant will pay more than the percentage of the rent that makes up the difference between what we pay and what the tenant pays.
That's interesting.
We are trying, we're working really hard right now, however, to close that gap and to make sure that that does not happen.
Because several people I know have been having that, and then they have high electric bills and water bills, and those homes are not properly insulated or energy efficient. And, you know, if it's a working person that's making so much a month or a week, it's hard. And there's a lot of neighborhoods like that.
It's very difficult.
People are getting money and they're, you know, they don't have their homes properly, you know, straight. And also I have one more question. As far as neighborhoods with an influx of crime that landlords do not do background checks on, not so much the tenants, but then there's the people that, like a son or family member that has long criminal background, and they come and terrorize the neighborhoods. How are you all handling those type of situations?
Well, I am so glad that you asked about this, because one of the things that I have concluded about the way this housing authority manages its Section 8 program is that it has, I think, taken a very narrow view of its responsibilities when it ought to be taking a broader view. That is
and
to
it's
say...
it's been a blind eye to it for a very long time. Yeah. St. Rock, Central City, prime examples. I'll listen and hang up. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, dear.
You can look forward to the Housing Authority beginning to take on greater responsibility for the behavior of tenants that live in our Section 8 facilities, and the degree to which landlords comply with the requirements.
Behavior?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, we got some, you know, there are folks that bring disruptive behavior to communities.
Mm-hmm.
They not only create issues for themselves and their neighbors, but they make it very difficult for the Section 8 program to develop broader acceptability.
So now there's a look at the behavior of the tenants.
And the Housing Authority has not done much in that regard up to now, has not seen it as their responsibility. I think if the Section 8 program is ever to be fully accepted in the city of New Orleans, we have to take some of that responsibility on, and we're about to do that.
Okay. Let's take another call here. Jay?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, my question, one is if this show has become the David Gilmore show, because we've heard David Gilmore be able to put out his propaganda numerous times on the show.
Would you like me to answer that question before you move
community
on?
Community groups have not been able to give their critique specifically around the plan to destroy the Iberville public housing development.
Would you like me to answer your question since it's my show?
Oh, could I just ask a number of questions and then you can respond? Or
No, you asked a question I think is my right, since it's my show, to answer your question. No, it's not the David Gilmore show.
Well, that's good to know. But we would like to give the community an opportunity, folks like Hands Off Iberville, who've been fighting to defend Iberville against the attempts of Gilmore and his development partners, Press Kabakoff of HRI, and Richard Barron to destroy the Iberville.
Jay, you've been on this radio station before?
The question I want to present to Mr. Gilmore is, how can he go through and carry out the destruction of Iberville when it's one of the few sources of affordable housing in post-Katrina New Orleans, where the homeless population has doubled?
Hold on. Go ahead.
Where there's hundreds of apartments that are ready to be that could be opened at Iberville, and yet he refuses to open them to people that desperately need housing.
Okay. Before he answers that question, because I'm putting a stop to him for a minute, let me ask you a question, Jay. You been on this radio station before?
We have repeatedly requested, Mr. Stevens,
Ask him my question.
Have
you been on this radio station
Gilmore,
before?
But we have been refused numerous times.
Have you, been on this radio station before?
Mr. Gilmore,
if you can't answer my question, I'm going to ask Mr. Gilmore to move on.
Out his propaganda.
I'm going to say it one more time here, and then I'm going to move on to the next one. Have you been on this radio station before? I thought so. All right, let's go to line two. John, what you say? Don't answer that question. If you can't call me and be respectful of my show, don't call here no more. What you say, John? John. All right, let's go to Miss Sandra. Miss Sandra?
Yes. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Gerard, I have a question for Gilmore. I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
What my question is about the board. I attended a meeting, a Hano meeting, and the only person I saw sitting at the table that was administering the meeting was Gilmore. And I saw all these neighborhood people in the audience, myself included, and I have to say that I had heard him described as a dictator, but I wanted to see for myself. So I came to the meeting. I was very surprised to see only one person sitting at the podium, which I thought that there should be more representatives from the community. And when I heard persons ask questions from the audience, I found that Gilmore was very rude. I felt like it was 1940. And he was in charge of a plantation. And when he did not like the questions, he had a security guard threatened to remove them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was horrified because this is our community. And we do have a right to ask questions. And we do have a right to be involved in the building of the community.
Okay. Yeah, so let me give him a chance to respond real quickly to that part, and then you can go to your second part.
Okay, good.
Mr. Gilmore?
Yeah, thank you. Let me just say this, that right now and for the last several years, Hano has been under federal receivership. The board was, the power of the board was vacated many years ago, and I am the appointed HUD federal receiver. And I have two responsibilities. One is to run the agency on a day-to-day basis, and the other is to administer the board, is to be the board. So that's why when you come to a board meeting, you will see one board member, and that's the receiver. I should point out that it is the intent of our plan over the next 2 to 3 years, frankly, to end this receivership, to bring Hano back to the condition that will make everybody proud of it, and to restore Hano to the governance of the city of New Orleans rather than the federal government. And under those circumstances, there would be a board of commissioners reappointed to administer or to govern the agency.
Okay. Ms. Andrew?
Okay. Well, why haven't you... since you seem to be making all the plans and the decisions, why aren't more residents of the community involved in the building, in the planning? Because when I passed the work site, I'm not seeing anybody that looked like they were former residents of that building that they're building. It's like someone came from another state and told me, I don't like your house, and I'm going to clean it up and fix it up the way I want to, with no participation from you. And that's the height of an insult to a community. And I want to know, why aren't you involving more residents and community persons?
Okay, Ms. Sandra, I'm going to let him answer that question. I got to take another one before going to go into break here. Thank you, dear.
Okay.
Ms. Sandra, just let me say to you that in fact, if you were to speak to resident leaders in the city right now, I think what you'd find is that, in fact, they are, to an increasing degree, being invited in to participate in this process, including the redevelopment of Iberville and decision-making about policies and practices at the Housing Authority and so on. And I would invite you to come back anytime you would like to a board meeting and come and testify. And express your concerns, and we'll address them right then and there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a break here before we go into our next set of conversations with folks here. But let me set something straight. Cut that music. Cut the music. I'm going to set something straight. And Mr. Gilmore, this don't involve you. But one thing that I will not tolerate here is anybody to try to castigate me on my own daggone show. And Jay Arena, let me be the first one to tell you to yourself and the rest of the public that just heard your nonsense when you call this radio station. First of all, you've been on here several times. It may not have been this show, but you have addressed situations on this radio station that I have to make a choice whether you're here or not. You may not know it, but let me tell you one thing, fella. Don't you ever call here again with that bull. Nobody's worried about you and your reasoning. I'm not, and I don't think that most folks that are here can do so. As many people that have called this radio station not to complain about Mr. Gilmore, but there may be some complaints, I don't think I have to take up for Mr. Gilmore. I think he's a big boy. He can do it himself. But don't get me started about how many people call here to complain about you. I didn't bring that to the table. Don't ever come to the fight with a BB gun when I got the M16, buddy. And don't you ever forget that. Take the break.
Hello, this is Dr. Gary Clark. Please join me this Wednesday at 12 o'clock noon for Dr. Clark 101. My guest will be Mr. Landon Allen, former director of the State Republican Party Minority Outreach Program. Again, Dr. Gary Clark, Dr. Clark 101 on WBOK, Wednesday at 12 o'clock noon. Real talk for real time.
Sweet Lorraine's Jazz Club is a proud supporter of WBOK 1230 AM, where it's real talk for real times. Sweet Lorraine's strongly encourages all of our fans, patrons, friends, and family to continue to support WBOK because they are the voice of our community. We also appeal to all business owners and entrepreneurs who have a vested interest in our community to support WBOK with your advertising dollars. Sweet Lorraine's Jazz Club, the club with the silver lining, is located at 1931 St. Claude Avenue and features fabulous cuisine and exciting live entertainment Tuesday through Sunday. Wednesday is our new artist showcase, followed by trumpeter Mario Abney's straight-ahead jazz jam session beginning at 7 p.m. Sweet Lorraine's Jazz Club supports WBOK 1230 AM because they make a difference.
Your business is our business. At Rich Disposal, we'll come to you wherever you are. At Rich Disposal, commercial, industrial, and all of that. At Rich Disposal.
At Richard's Disposal, we provide non-hazardous solid waste pickup service to industrial and commercial customers in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and Mississippi. Richard's Disposal provides portable toilets for construction sites, festivals, and other special events. At Richard's Disposal, we appreciate our customers one pickup at a time. To make your business our business, call us at 504-241-2142. That's Richard's Disposal at 504-241-2142.
So we'll come to you wherever you at Rich's Disposal, commercial, industrial, and all of that. At Rich's Disposal.
The Dish on Haynes features the culinary skill of Chef Jason Center. Start your meal with crab cakes dazzled with homemade remoulade sauce. Next, try our most popular dish, the Catfish Charles. Two fried catfish fillets over a panko breaded potato cake topped with our signature Cajun crawfish cream sauce and a side of roasted corn and peppers. Finish your meal with a delicious fudge cake a la mode. After which, you can go upstairs to our lounge and dance the night away. Join us at Dish on Haynes on Wednesdays for $5 martinis, or come for happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays and enjoy 2-for-1 well drinks and $3 drink specials. Dish on Haynes is open Tuesday through Saturday, 3 to 10 p.m., and the upstairs lounge is open late night on Friday and Saturday. Dish on Haynes is located at 9734 Haynes Boulevard, one block from Reed Boulevard. Call for reservations and party information at 504-301-0356, 504-301-0356, or visit our website at www.dishonhaynes.com.
Hey, New Orleans, this is attorney Russell Stegeman. Do you have a legal problem you've been wanting to talk to an attorney about? Or are you concerned about legal issues and justice issues affecting our community? Join me and my special guest every Wednesday at 2 p.m. as we discuss legal issues affecting our community. That's 2 p.m. every Wednesday on WBOK 1230 AM. Real talk for real time.
This is Blaine Bondi, co-host of Showtime in the Afternoon with Paul Boyer and John Slade. Join us this Wednesday as our guest will be Luella Givens from the Bessie Board as we discuss education in our state. And that's right here on Showtime in the Afternoon from 3 to 6 on WBOK 1230 AM and WBOK1230AM.com, where it's real talk for real times.
Later on tonight, it's Al Sharpton.
Keeping it real, I'm your host, Reverend Al Sharpton.
Followed by attorney Warren Ballantyne.
Right here, right now, it's the Warren Ballantyne Show.
On WBOK, it's real talk for real time.
The Good Morning Show, hot like fire, talking to you on WBOK, 1230 AM, real talk for real time.
Real talk for real times, that is what we do. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Gerard Stevens with you. David Gilmore, the administrator for Hano in the building. Y'all, 20 minutes in front of 10 o'clock at 10 this morning. We've got the money, boys. The money does grow on trees. But right now, we need to take some more telephone calls. Let's see. Henry, you've been holding on for a minute. Henry, you there?
Yes,
Good morning.
Good morning to you, G and Ms. Gilmore. Look, you know, I was listening to you speaking about the project and how we, and when it's supposed to be tore down or demolished or when, whatever they're going to do to it. But, you know, the last time they tore down all those projects and stuff, I don't know if the city really thought about it, but where they moved the people that was living there, they relocated them. And they relocated them all outside of New Orleans and Jefferson Parish, and we lost a lot of our tax bases and a lot of our you know, our city finances and stuff like that by the people leaving, and a lot of our business closed up. And it seemed like to me they should have done that in a one by one basis and kept the people located in New Orleans. You know,
kind of like staggered. You wanted to see it staggered then.
Yeah, you know, where we could hold some of the people in here. We lost a lot of people, and a lot of business closed down because of the, you know, right around the projects and stuff. You said other stores and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They all closed down, and we lost a lot of, you know, finance stuff went outside the city. And, you know, Jefferson Parish don't give a hoot about New Orleans. Mm-hmm.
You want to comment?
Yeah, I do. Because I couldn't agree more with what Henry is saying. Henry, I got to tell you that I can't tell people where to live. I don't intend to tell people where to live. If folks want to relocate to some place other than New Orleans, that's fine. I will be of as much assistance as I can be. But I can tell you that I intend to encourage people as much as we can. Encourage, not instruct. People to remain here in the city. And by the way, the folks that I've spoken to, for the most part, at Iberville and other places, if relocation is in the cards, they want to stay in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. All right,
well, I had a business over on Claiborne Street, but when they did the move, relocating the people, they just scattered them all across. And I don't think that a lot of those people wanted to go in those areas, but they filled up all their apartments in Jefferson Parish. We had an apartment right here in New Orleans. They just looked like they looked over. Mm.
We want to make Henry. We want to make sure that we want to make sure that people have choices. That's the deal for us. People ought to choose where they want to live.
All right, Henry. I got to take another call here. Appreciate you.
Okay, then. Okay, thank you.
All right, have a good morning, Miss Lilly.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Gerard. Mr. Gilmore.
Good morning.
I had so many things to talk about, but like I said, I don't want to jump on because Gerard, I know you can take care of yourself, but I could be one of those that call and tell you about the disruption between Jay Arena. I've been to every housing meeting. This is for the lady that called before, and I don't know what meeting she went to that we couldn't see, because this is the first time, the first time in all these receivers that we could even express ourselves, because usually they never did. And right now, it always was a very adversarial atmosphere. But right now, we're about to see the harvest of the seeds that Mr. Gilmore and his staff had planted, you know, with the things. Recently, we had a Black History program, and the best thing we had was a dedication of the boardroom to Ms. Helen Beatrice Washington Lang, a pioneer in the community, serving serving for fighting for all rights, mm-hmm. a true community activist. Mr. Gilmore has enacted, like, we call the return of phone calls, especially people say they can't get Section 8. There's a housing choice connect, you know, where you can call, put in with sort of bedrooms with neighborhood and whatever that you want to live in. Mm. So all I can say is that sometime we need to listen and don't let other people tell us that they never lived in public housing, definitely never lived in the Iberville. Say what's going on.
You know, Ms. Lilly, not everything is perfect, and I'm not one who sit up here and say that I am. Mr. Gilmore knows that everything needs to be, I think, revisited several times to become a little bit better than what it was.
And you're right.
But what I want everybody to understand that why he's here and why he wanted to have this conversation with the folks, of course I'm going to say yes. Mr. Gilmore, please come back every month and have some conversation with us. Because my responsibility is for those folks that have some type of housing issue that may have Housing Authority of New Orleans written on their check or their voucher or whatever it is, that they need to be able to talk to the head man because he may not know personally that issue. That is why he's here. And that's why I continuously ask him to come back.
Right, because I think all we needed was a little push, and right now we are climbing. Mm-hmm. But we did need that help. I just want to thank Mr. Gilmore, and I also really want to thank him for dedicating that boardroom to Miss Helen Lang, because this lady was tremendous, and I really appreciate that. Oh, and my last thing, I think I told him, don't forget everybody to go out and register to vote, and if you register, please vote. Don't just register.
Thank you, Miss Lilly.
Thank you.
All right.
You know, I wanted to just add to something you just said, Gerard, and that is that I'm delighted to come on this program with you once a month and to give information out as much as I can give. But I also want you to know that I come on this show to learn, because I learn some things by listening to the callers and to the folks that call in on this show. I may learn some things that I don't know about, and it's very important. It's a two-way street for me.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take some more calls. Let's, Kevin, what you say?
Hey, Gerard, good morning.
How's it going?
Mr. Gilmore, good morning.
Good morning.
Question to you, sir, is are there anything in the bylaws that would prevent a staff person of yours or a handle staff person from participating in the selection of a developer or subsequently working with the developer? In the past, we've had people who sit on panels who select, rather, it's contract developers, and then they go out and work for the developers later after they had the best interest of all participants. So are there anything in the bylaws that will state that, not cause that not happening in the future?
Yes, it's a violation excuse me, of Housing Authority policy.
Mm-hmm.
If you are involved in the selection of or the supervision of a contractor of any kind, or the selection of anybody that participates, you can't leave the Housing Authority, go to work for that contractor for 2 years.
And I think that's also a city ordinance.
I'm sure it is. It's also, yeah. There's a federal requirement, yes, that goes along with it. So there are these federal conflict of interest statutes that apply to these situations as well.
Okay. And my second question, if I could get this in right quick, Gerard.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any policy changes in the payment staff? I mean, I'm work with a lot of the small contractors who work with your agency as well as city agencies, but they're the last ones to get paid on contracts that they've either performed the work on already, and it takes them 3 to 6 months to get paid. So under your receivership, what policies or procedures are you putting in place so that cannot happen any longer?
How long?
3 to 6 months.
Yeah, I think I know what he's talking about. I bet you he's talking about not the contractors,
subcontractors,
to the Housing Authority, but the subs to the to the contractors. Is that right? Is that a good guess?
Well, it's a good guess on the subcontractors as well as, because I understand a contractor comes in, he bids on your job, he should have adequate enough money to perform that job.
Right.
But when it comes down to the subcontractors or the local minority participants, and I'm not only talking about African Americans, I'm talking about Hispanic women, white women, black women, Caucasian men, veterans. When the subcontractors come to the job, it's always some kind of delay in getting them their payment. And if we're trying to help small businesses grow, we need to make sure that they're paid in 30 days.
Great point.
So the money is already there in your hand from Housing Authority, I mean from Washington, D.C. to the city. There should be a way that money should be already, you know, prepared to give to these small contractors. On one end, I hear you saying we want to work with the small minority businesses in New Orleans, and we want to make sure it's local participation. But if you can't pay us, that's all talk. So what policies or procedures are you going to put in place to make sure that they are compensated for the work they have done?
Good
because
question.
They can't
That's
wait 3 months and 6 months.
Point.
Good question.
Let me get at that.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you calling this morning.
A couple things to say. And I appreciate the call. One is that we have established a policy at the agency that where we pay our contractors within 30 days of the receipt of their invoice.
Mm-hmm.
So they get their money in 30 days.
But the contractor
you are
itself,
talking about, that's right. That's
but the subcontractor is liable to the...
And we've been hearing more and more instances of stories about that where the contractors aren't paying their subcontractors in a timely way. Heretofore, the Housing Authority hasn't engaged itself very much in that activity, in that issue, and we are doing that now. We've had a couple of instances, by the way, I probably shouldn't be saying this on the air, but where we, in fact, have paid a subcontractor who is in a dispute with a contractor or have intervened in the dispute with the contractor to see to it that the contractor gets paid. And sometimes that has amounted to significant amounts of money. But I want to say one other thing.
Did you say you all intervened?
We have. That's okay. Absolutely. The Housing Authority.
So is that a policy that you don't want to? Because I noticed that you started off you don't want to put that on the air, but you did.
I don't have the ability. Yeah, I did it anyway. I don't have the legal ability to pay the sub because they don't have a legal relationship.
But is there anything in the contract that states to the GC involved here, you're the prime contractor, and it is your responsibility to make sure that all subcontractors get paid?
Is that any legalities
that will go
Absolutely.
Forth
that's,
in any type of contract?
That's the intervention that I'm talking about. But there's one other little piece of business here, and that is I would like some of these small minority businesses that we're talking about here to come and work directly for Hano, not just to be subcontractors and to be at the disposal of other decisions, of decisions that get made outside the agency.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working to...
What would those qualifications be?
Well, the reason that a lot of these small businesses don't come to work directly for Hano is, A, they don't have much capitalization.
Mm-hmm.
B, they can't buy insurance. C, they meet the insurance requirements. And C, is that they can't get bonded because they don't have the amount, they don't have the money. We are working to develop a pool.
And what I've been hearing, more municipalities across the country are starting to do their own types of bonding and things of that sort. Is that where you're headed?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I want to develop an umbrella policy at the Housing Authority that small minority businesses can get in under and be bonded through this.
Now, here's the question as we get ready to wrap up our conversation, then I'm going to put all the context that we've been talking about for the last hour here. Time frame. When will all this good stuff that we've been talking about for the last hour start going to effect?
It's in effect.
And you said you just spent $1 million on software so folks can start looking at different places of choice to live.
Right. The Housing Choice Connect program is up and running. And you know what? If I had any real brains, I would have brought the website.
Anybody, we got the website?
They can give them the
website for the Housing Choice? Just type it on the thing. We'll take this call. It's at Hano.com.
It's at Hano.com. You can get connected
to
the Housing.
That's .org. Hano.org.
Beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. Hano.org. You can get connected to the Housing Choice Connect program.
Okay.
The Crescent City Job Match program It's going to be up and running in a matter of days at this point. I don't have a specific date. All these other activities, I'm going to go out on a limb and say to you that within 6 months or less, we're going to have a bonding pool, an insurance pool that small businesses and minority businesses can get in under. We've just appointed somebody to be our Section 3 coordinator. That's the kind of stuff that this person is going to be working on and making happen.
Okay. Let's take this call here, the final call before you have to wrap up here. George, good morning.
Good morning, Gerard.
How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Gilmore.
Good morning, George.
Got a question for you. In the spirit of what we're saying, we're talking about minority businesses and that 40% threshold, and having more minorities participate within the system. Now, are we talking, when we come to those projects, are we talking certain kinds of occupations? Or are we looking at, for instance, if I owned a door company and I wanted to supply doors and it didn't meet Hano's specifications, would I be a part? Could I participate?
Did you say did or didn't meet the spec?
You know, I did meet the spec.
You did.
I met my door company, I'm able to supply the doors. that meets all specifications that, right. that are necessary, you know, for the Hanover projects. But I am not. I mean, am I able to participate at
Absolutely
that point?
Absolutely.
That's
are.
What I'm trying to find out. I'm trying to make a determination. What is considered professional service contracts as compared to those contracts where that 40% minority participation is amenable? Can you help me there?
Yeah, the 40% minority participation applies to the development programs, the two development programs at BW Cooper and at Lafitte. You can go on the Hano website, hano.org. And you can learn about all the job opportunities, the contracting opportunities, the solicitations that we have out on the web now.
Let me give you an example of the reason why I'm asking. Okay.
Very quickly, George.
I'm going to be quick about it. I happen to own an appliance business.
Uh-huh.
And we have applied both for Lafitte and BW Cooper. And in both instances, we were told that now our appliance business is in the city of New Orleans. We've been a part of the community for over 8 years. And we were told in both instances that you all deal strictly with GE. That's coming. All of those appliances are coming outside the city of New Orleans. And the people in New Orleans have nothing to do with it. And that this is a professional service contract, and we do not have an opportunity to participate at all. And my question is, in the spirit of the 40%, why wouldn't you look at a business if it's a viable business and it could meet the needs that you would look at a business inside the city rather than going strictly outside the city because you can?
George, I don't know who told you all that, but we don't buy by brand. We buy by spec. And if you've got – when we put out a bid specification, it may specify a product, but it will say, or it's equal.
Mm-hmm.
You got a product to sell that is the equal of anything we're looking to acquire – you make sure you bid on that job. And if you're the lowest responsible bidder, you'll get the job.
We're running out of time, okay? I own a Sears store at East New Orleans, okay? We did put a bid in on the CJP project. We tried to. And the purchasing administrator, I could give you the name. I'll do it. I'll talk to you off the air, if you will. He told us flat out that we were not able to because this is a professional service contract, and he had the right to go where he wanted to go. And they were dealing with GE, and he wouldn't talk to me any longer.
Okay, that
I would like to talk to you about this off the air because we were totally
George,
denied,
hold on, man. Hold on.
You know, an opportunity. And we're talking Sears here, and you know, in Sears
George?
Matches.
George.
We're talking a national brand.
Hold on, okay? All right, I got to wrap up here because my guys are telling me that I got another show coming up at 10 o'clock, so I did put them on hold so you can have a conversation. Folks that want to know any more information, especially with the new software, where do they need to go again? Is this the Housing Choices?
Hano.org, Hano.org, and you can get linked up with the Housing Choice, Crescent City Job Matching Service.
Mm-hmm.
You can get connected to the Housing Choice Connection Program.
Okay.
And you can learn everything there is to know about our solicitations.
Very good, sir. Come back again?
You know I will.
Would you please?
I certainly will.
And by the way, you want your own show?
No, I don't want my own show. I think you do a great job, Gerard, and I'm happy to come on your show.
Thank you very much. You can tell you made me mad. All right, very good. David Gilmore, pleasure. Thank you for coming in. And, of course, we'll see you again next time you come into the building and have some conversation with us. For those that want to check it out, make sure that you listen again tonight after the Warren Valentine Show. This show will repeat so that you can get all the details. And, of course, we'll put it up on Ustream so you can hear it again whenever you want to. Coming up, Money Does Grow on Trees. As we say good morning to all of our folks that are listening by web this morning out in Lawrenton, North Carolina. What you say, Sheila Jackson? Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's see, James, Shelby, and of course Terrence coming up next. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, bright and early, right here at WBOK. It's Real Talk for Real Times.